welcome to another episode of Off the Menu. I'm your host, Vincent Franchini from Tumblr House, here with a Sylvain, Charles Coulombe.
Sylvain? You mean Sylvan, don't you?
Oh, Sylvan. Yeah, Sylvan.
Sylvan.
Excuse me.
Sylvan. So you mean of the woods, of the forest?
Very much so.
So I'm like the huntsman, or I'm like a weird cross between the wood elves and the wild hunt. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So, what about the fairies? Are the fairies in there?
Yeah, the fairies are in there.
Yeah.
And mushrooms and nuts and deer and stuff. Yeah, all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah.
The woods. I love the forest. It's true. I do. I don't spend a lot of time in it, although there's a very nice stretch of woods here, not too far from where I live.
Have you ever been hunting?
Many, many years ago, yes.
What you hunt?
Not elk.
Really? Where? New England?
No, Arizona.
Where is that?
Not Arizona, New Mexico. Northern New Mexico.
Wow. There's elk in New Mexico.
Yeah. Northern New Mexico in the mountains, sure.
Cool.
It was delicious.
Really?
Yeah.
How come people don't eat more of it? You don't hear about people eating elk.
Well, it's probably because they're big. And let's just say it's better to do it with a group of people rather than just, you know, one man could go deer stalking, but you need a number of people to bring down and bring an elk home. They're big.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
And yum. And yummy.
Okay.
Did I mention that? Yummy? Now, see, we're going to have a lot of outrage hunters telling me how they did hunt an elk all by themselves, and we were wusses.
That's how life is.
Yeah, well, but I have to admit, though, although I've not been a hunter for many, 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 many years, I certainly support it as I do fishing, hunting and fishing, fish and wildlife. You remember the old bumper sticker, promote wildlife, throw a party. But I do love game, even so. And here in Austria, hunting is a big deal. Even people who have never hunted in their lives wear hunting jackets, and there are antlers on everything. And every menu during the season has game on it. Three different kinds of venison, wild boar, goose, all sorts of game birds. I love game.
It's interesting to me because it's not as neat as sort of the meat in America, for example. Like you know, you have a chicken farm, you have a bunch of cows. It's more industrialized. Whereas with game, it's more complicated, right?
Yes, it is a bit more complicated. Although they do have game farms where they run the game past the shooters. But if you're doing it the old fashioned way and track them yourself and all that, it's a challenge, and the game can get away. You know, it's the reason why it's considered a sport is because the animal you're stalking or the bird you're shooting at may very well elude you. So now, but there are also rules that come out of hunting. If you wound an animal, you've got to track it down and kill it. You can't just wound it and say, oh, well. And this could be very difficult. But it's an obligation. And the hunting has its own language, its own music, certainly here in Europe. And, of course, as far as forests go, gosh, the Vienna Woods, the Great Ardennes in Belgium and France, and the Netherlands, the Haute Fein in Belgium. I do love forests, that is true. I do indeed. And when I was a boy, there were woods near my home in Westchester, New York, Mount Kisco. And I loved going into the woods with my dog. Even, you know, I was little, I was like 5, 6. And I'd go off into the woods with Nellie, who was our mixed blood, collie German shepherd. She had the face of a collie, you know, that long beaky face,
Yeah.
but the build of a German Shepherd.
Having trouble picturing that. Okay.
Yeah, and she had the coloring of a German Shepherd, except the face. But I loved that dog, I'll tell you. And she would take me off into the woods. The one time we were attacked by a skunk, and I had to be bathed in tomato juice when I got home, which was both humiliating and disgusting.
That's how you do it. That's
Yeah.
Has that changed? Is there something more modern?
I don't know if there is. I only got sprung the one time. I learned. I'll tell you what, these days when I see a skunk, I don't stay around and play with no skunk.
So soap and water is wholly
No.
insufficient.
Yeah, completely. And it is so gag making. It is for, well, you know, when you even in LA, when you go driving along and you go by a place where a skunk's been hit, you know, the little creature thought spraying the car was going to make a difference. It didn't. But the odor lingers. You know what I mean? You've driven past and you've.
I've smelled skunks. We have skunks here.
I
Yeah.
remember one time I was going to a friend's house in Hollywood. He and I are going up the walk to his apartment door. And there's a skunk and her five or six little skunklings. Well, let me tell you something. We batted away. We weren't going to get nowhere near mama and her babies, you know. And we went around, we went all the way around the apartment building to get in the back because you don't want to stick around with skunks. Just
Yeah.
they're
Like Pepe Le Pew.
yeah. Now, mind you, people keep them as pets. They have their the scent glands surgically removed, and that's why you don't want to let a pet skunk out in the wild because they have no way to defend themselves. They're just yum yums.
Okay. What else is going on, Charles?
Oh, so much, so much. For one thing, I want you to see something. Two important things going on. Firstly, I want you to look very carefully at my lapel pin.
United
What's that?
Nations.
Yeah, it is. You see the tie?
Nice. Yeah.
I call it my Telstar tie.
Very nice.
Dee da 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 dee 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 dee. Yes, Telstar. Why? Two reasons. I'm wearing the UN pin, as I do on all UN international days, because today is the International Day of Social Justice. Now, if you were to look up the website of the International Day of Social Justice, you would get a blast of wokery so hard your head would melt. But in honor of it and to help my friends at the United Nations, I put out on my Facebook page today all sorts of stuff for social justice, including Bella Menzer's great book on Catholic political thought, 1789 to 1848. I put out Quas Primas of Pius XI. I put out the various links to different Catholic documents on social justice, social teaching, and above all, made the point that without the social kingship of Christ, there is no social justice. And I know my friends at the United Nations would be happy to know that if they heard, could hear me.
I'm sure, Charles.
And you bet. I have no doubt. And the other thing, partly to show my world solidarity, not to say my one worldism, partly to show my appreciation for that other, well, I must step back a minute. When I was little, when I wasn't being chased by skunks in the wilds of Westchester, we had something going on in New York called the World's Fair at Brooklyn Meadows. And the perisphere was its symbol, was the globe. Now, in my little mind, for some reason, I associated the perisphere of the World's Fair with the symbol of the United Nations and the symbol of NASA. Now, these three aren't really connected.
Human progress.
Well, yeah, hence the Telstar motif.
Yeah.
So, I would recommend, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't know what I'm talking about, look up Telstar's song by the Tornadoes and listen to it. I think it should be the UN hymn, UN anthem instead of that thing they do by W.H. Auden. But that's just me. Anyway, so that early 60s progress feel, that was epitomized by it. So that being the case, somehow even today, these three things are somewhat linked in my mind. So the day before, we had the landing on Mars of the recovery
right
rover.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I am very happy about it. I've always been a fan of space exploration. I know what you're going to say. Why put out all that money that could be spent better here on Earth? Well, number one, I don't know that it would be spent better here on Earth. Every penny shot off into space is another penny the government can't spend here. So that's something to consider.
That's
you know
not
what
true at all.
On. What? The money they blow on space exploration is not being spent on something else.
They can print as much money as they want.
Well, there's that. But in any case,
okay.
But then that blows the argument that the money's being wasted. So there. Heads I win, tails you lose.
Okay.
So, as I was saying before I interrupted, exactly. Now you're doing it. We're flailing. Now you know why I do it. Anyway, the thing is, the thing is that an awful lot of technology that we use every day has come out of the space program. And frankly, I think that it does speak to something in the human spirit, the desire to see what lies beyond the next ridge. It's what brought our ancestors here from Europe. And Mars is certainly a frontier I've always been fascinated by. Now, I have to admit, I am very much disappointed with Mars as it is so far. I want the Mars of Edgar Rice Burroughs and Ray Bradbury and Lynn Carter. I want the exotic cities, the princesses, the under the moons of Mars. That's what I want. Well, I'm not getting it, at least not yet. And that's the funny thing. I posted on Facebook three pictures from illustrations of those three authors' works. And I said, well, you know, sadly enough, Mars isn't like this. And a friend of mine, his comment was, not yet. Who knows, ladies and gentlemen, what the future holds? But at any rate, it's certainly, I've always been fascinated by Mars. And of course, Ray Bradbury, who I knew somewhat, and who of course wrote the Martian Chronicles, he was in a symposium with Carl Sagan and Arthur C. Clarke and several other people. They produced a book called Mars and the Mind of Man, which had a lot of interesting points to make about the influence the angry red planet has had on the human imagination. And Ray made the point, which I think is very true, that behind every astronaut or scientist he had ever met was a romantic who inspired them to do something with their lives. And that, fair enough. So maybe we won't see the Martian cities under the twin moons. But maybe someday we'll reach Mars and do something or other with it. I don't know. It'd be nice if we could do something extraordinary with our own planet.
I'm not interested in it because I haven't even explored a fraction of our own planet and the wonders and beauty and amazement of Earth.
Oh yeah, and there's so much more to be seen. I've seen, I think, somewhat more than your esteemed self, and there's still so much more
I want to
see.
Yeah,
but there's still a lot more. There's more, a lot more I want to see here in Europe. There's more I want to see in California. There's more I want to see in New York, Canada, Australia, South America. There are all sorts of things I want to explore. I doubt I'll get the chance, but I'll see more than I've seen, that's for sure. But I doubt I'll get the chance to see everything I want to see.
Have you gone to China?
Not yet.
You went to India, though.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Of course, you know, living in Arcadia, it's like being in China.
The next best thing.
Or even better, because it's in America.
It reminds me, we got one comment. I'm gonna put you to task, Charles. We got a comment because you said something that slipped by me at the time. So you're talking about Chinese New Year,
Yeah.
and Chinese New Year was on a Friday, and you said you encouraged people to eat steak.
Fine. I mean, it is a general practice. It's usually not on Friday. When it's on, so eat it on Saturday.
Okay.
All right?
See, the watchdogs are.
You know, they're always out there waiting for every little thing. I wish I could do for them what they do for me. Oh, yes. Boy, oh boy, I'd have fun with it.
Okay. Anything else? That's it?
Yes, no, that's not
Yeah,
it.
there's
Don't
a
be
lot more.
ridiculous.
Yeah,
There's a
sorry.
lot more. For one thing, when people are going to be actually watching this, February 22nd in real time, guess what?
What?
It's going to be Washington's birthday, the real Washington's birthday, the father of our country, the first president. First in war, first in peace, first to the hearts of his countrymen, blah, 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 all that stuff.
That's great. Yeah, why you say the real Washington as opposed to the fake Washington?
No, as opposed to the fake Washington's birthday, which was last Monday.
That was President's Day. I didn't say that it
Whatever.
was Washington's birthday. There was no.
Actually, legally, it's Washington's birthday.
What does that mean?
It means that it is now colloquially called President's Day. But legally, it is still called Washington's birthday, and it is the holiday that was transferred from February 22nd to the nearest Monday before.
I still don't know what legally means. I mean, the label is the label. They changed the label, so.
Well, the label change came after Martin Luther King Day became a holiday.
Okay.
See, all right. Let me try to put this into some sort of historical context for you. Because, you know, I realize that since it happened before your birth, you would have absolutely no understanding. It's fine. It's like this. February 22nd was Washington's birthday. Got that?
February 22nd, birthday, yes.
Of George Washington,
George Washington.
first president of the United States.
Got it.
All right. And that was the day that was generally celebrated. People would eat cherry pie in honor of the non-existent cherry tree he didn't cut down. People would there'd be all sorts of pageants about him in school. You'd read about him and talk about him and so on. Unless we've got the day off in school, but leading up to it, you would talk about it. All right. Now, February 12th was Lincoln's birthday, which was not a national holiday, but it
Yeah.
was a state holiday in California.
Yeah.
So we would get off for that too, but you'd have all sorts of stuff in the couple of days before about Lincoln. You say so, Lincoln's birthday, Washington's birthday, but they were observed whatever day they fell. So if it was a Thursday, it was a Friday, it was a Wednesday, a Monday, whenever it fell, that was when you took off. That was when you celebrated. Full stop. And because it migrated through the week like that, it forced you to think about it. But in 1969, Congress decided that a lot of our civil holidays, Memorial Day, Washington's birthday, Labor Day, Veterans Day, would travel to the nearest Monday. So they became purely, each of them became purely an excuse for a 3-day weekend. And as a result, unlike the 4th of July, which continues to have a presence, they lost a lot of their meaning. They became just another excuse for, you know, another day off. But then, in 1980 something, 1990 something, Martin Luther King Day became a national holiday, a federal holiday. Now, the interesting thing was that his birthday is the same as Robert E. Lee's. So until the woke began twerking out of their rear ends, their thoughts, in certain places you celebrated the 2 days together, as in King Lee Day, which made me giggle because I could imagine some moron saying, "Who's this King Lee? I'm not celebrating no king, but I never heard of no King Lee. But at any rate, for some reason, when the Martin Luther King Day holiday came along, people started calling Washington's birthday President's Day. I could only figure it was to ignore Lincoln. Or maybe the fact that it had been sort of cut adrift from the reason for the holiday was the reason. I don't know, but that's what happened. That was the time period. But in any case, as you know, I'm severely divided in my feelings toward General Washington.
Well, you're very positive. You're as positive for him as you have been for any president. I mean, more positive to him.
No, that's certainly true, but I also have a lot of negatives.
I don't know if I've heard you voice all your negatives.
Oh, well, I'll tell you the negatives now then. Number
Okay.
one, he started the French and Indian War,
Okay.
which literally he started it, which began the process that ended in the conquest of my people by the British. So La Conquête sits over our heads. So obviously, I don't care for that very much. Secondly, being that we had the Quebec Act and all that, I'm definitely a loyalist as far as the revolution goes. So I didn't really care for General Washington turning around and taking up arms against the king who had given us our freedom, religion, and laws. So there's that. And I could also make the argument, if I chose to, that as president, his putting down the Whiskey Rebellion certainly went against the ideas that he espoused in the revolution.
I don't know too much about the Whiskey Rebellion.
1798, basically, a bunch of farmers who, because they were unable to transport their grain due to the ways that transport were in those days. The best thing they could do with their grain to make it saleable and portable was to turn it into whiskey. So the feds put taxes on it, which cut very much into the farmers' incomes. And since, of course, they had within the past few years fought another war against being taxed, bearing in mind that many of them weren't able to vote for the state assembly or for the Congress. They revolted, thinking, well, that's just what you do in the United States when you don't like what you're given. That's what the country was founded on, was rebellion and revolution. So the farmers thought that included them too. They were wrong. And President Washington got his troops together and he put it down. So that's the bad side of General Washington. Now, the good side is that as a military leader, he was certainly he may not have been the best commander in terms of tactics. Oh, and let's not forget his letting poor Major Andre hang.
I knew that one. Yeah.
Yeah. But having said all of that, there's also the fact that he definitely was a remarkable leader in of men. He was able to hold the army together through Valley Forge and various other catastrophes. He certainly showed a certain friendship for the Catholic faith. He banned Guy Fawkes Day in the army. He told Pius VI to appoint his bishop whomever he liked. And there is a very strong body of evidence that he became a Catholic on his deathbed, which would not Catholicize everything he'd done. But it's interesting if true. Now, that's the good side of General Washington. Plus, it was the fact that as our first president, he did establish the government such as it was. And at the end of the revolution, where they wanted to make him either king or dictator, he refused it. And he went back home to Mount Vernon, as he did after he was president. He wouldn't take more than 2 terms. So when King George III in London heard that General Washington had given up his command of the Continental Army and said goodbye to the Congress and gone back to his farm, his response was, "If this be true, that General Washington is the greatest man of the age. In giving up supreme power and going back to Mount Vernon, that was the name of his estate in Virginia. He showed a remarkable restraint that very few military leaders in his position have shown. So that's my view of George Washington, good and bad.
If I remember hi history class correctly, he wasn't too much of a president. I think the only thing I remember is that he was really in favor of being neutral overseas.
Yeah, he was in favor of being neutral overseas. He was against party conflict at home, which is why he appointed two sworn political enemies to his cabinet. He established the first cabinet. He made John Knox the artillery general from the war. He made him the Secretary of War. He made Thomas Jefferson the Secretary of State, our first Secretary of State, because of his diplomatic experience in France during the war. And he made Alexander Hamilton the Secretary of the Treasury. Now, of course, there's no warrant in the Constitution for a cabinet. So you might claim, if you liked, that he was the very first president to exceed his powers.
Interesting. Well, it's very British, though, isn't
It's British, but that doesn't mean it's in the Constitution.
But I mean, okay, I guess
It's
so.
more than just British, it's pragmatic. I mean, how he would be expected to run the country without a cabinet, I'm sure I
Yeah,
don't know.
and as you say, I mean,
I
America was
don't
a new
know.
creation at the time, and you draw from what you know.
No. I'm not faulting him for it. I'm just saying, if you're a very strict constructionist, there's no warrant in the Constitution for it. And you could make the argument that the Constitution, if very strictly constructed, would be unworkable.
So, if you were on the Supreme Court, how would you treat the Constitution? Would you just say this is unworkable? What do you hang your hat on?
Original intent of the founders. But that would require going into things like the Federalist Papers and all that.
And.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff you couldn't hang just on the document by itself. But as I say, for me, I would look to original intent, and failing that, to what the common law said. What I would not do is create new laws by discovering them, like Joseph Smith did with the magic spectacles. The same magic spectacles that the Supreme Court used and that Joseph Smith used are also often used on the documents of Vatican II. That's where we were able to get altar girls and communion in the hand and all kinds of good stuff.
How do I get these magic spectacles?
Well, you've got to be A, in charge, and re and B, very stupid and dishonest.
They must be handing those out like candy.
Oh, they are now, you betcha. Everything, I mean, in church and state, it's all, you just put on their magic spectacles. You know, there was a song in the 1850s, Oh, Dem Golden Slippers. And let me see, the chorus was, Oh, love them golden slippers, oh, them golden slippers, slippers, gonna wear to walk the golden street. Basically, it's about going to heaven. You know, but I think we could change golden slippers to golden specs or something.
All right.
Well, but that's not all.
Oh, okay.
February is fast waning.
Okay.
It's
Yes.
slipping away from our grasp, even as we speak. The first week of Lent is gone.
Yeah.
Well, not the first week of Lent, but certainly the days after Ash Wednesday. And tomorrow is Sunday. Yesterday, for those watching this in real time, it's in the Byzantine calendar. For us, it's the first Sunday in Lent. But for our Byzantine brethren, it's the Sunday of Orthodoxy. And by that, they don't mean Eastern Orthodoxy. It commemorates the Second Council of Nicaea that destroyed iconoclasm. But In the Byzantine Rite, there's a long list of heresies read out on the Sunday of Orthodoxy, and they are anathematized.
I feel like there's going to be a red pill coming up somewhere here.
Red pill.
What are the heresies they list?
Well, let's
I
see.
feel like this
I
is going to
don't
be something like Pius the Ninth, Syllabus of Error type
You hear yourself.
situation. I do hear myself, and I think there's a good chance I'm correct.
I think you're not being nice. Let's see. Now, mind you, they vary between, obviously, the Catholics and Orthodox condemn different things. So let's see. And it says, after reciting the Nicene Creed, this is the apostolic faith, this is the faith of the fathers, this is the Orthodox faith, this faith confirmeth the universe. Furthermore, we receive and confirm the counsels of the Holy Fathers and their traditions and writings, which accord with divine revelation. And though there are some who are enemies to this orthodoxy and adversaries to the providential and salutary revelation of the Lord toward us, yet hath the Lord been mindful of the reproaches of his servants, for he hath covered the opposers of his glory with shame and put the perverse enemies of orthodoxy to flight. And therefore we bless and praise those who have submitted their understanding to the obedience to the divine revelation and have contended for it. So following the holy scriptures and holding the traditions of the primitive church, we reject and anathematize all those who oppose the truth, if while the Lord tarried for their repentance and conversion, they have refused to return. And to each of the following statements of the deacon, the clergy, choir, and people respond, anathema thrice. To those who deny the existence of God and assert that the world is self-existing and that all things in it are made by chance without divine providence, anathema. To those who say that God is not a spirit but flesh, or that he is not just, merciful, wise, omniscient, and such like blasphemies, anathema. To those who dare to say that the Son of God and Holy Spirit are not consubstantial and equal in honor with the Father, and who profess that the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit are not one God, anathema. To those who madly assert that the coming of the Son of God into the world in the flesh and his voluntary passion, death, and resurrection were not necessary for our salvation and expiation of sin, anathema. To those who reject the grace of redemption preached in the gospel as the only means of our justification before God, anathema. To those who dare to say that the most pure Virgin Mary was not a virgin before childbirth, in childbirth, and after childbirth, anathema. To those who do not believe that the Holy Spirit inspired the prophets and apostles and by them instructed us in the true way to eternal salvation, confirm the same by miracles, and now dwelleth in the hearts of all faithful and sincere Christians, and guideth them into all truth, anathema. To those who do not confess with heart and mouth that the Holy Spirit proceedeth from the Father and the Son, as Christ saith in the Gospel, anathema. To those who reject the immortality of the soul and deny that the world will have an end, and that there will be a future judgment and eternal rewards, for the virtuous in heaven and punishment for the wicked, anathema. And it goes on and 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 on. What's that?
And they say all of that during the mass?
Well, it's a special service. It said, for those who mock and profane the holy images and relics which the Holy Church receives as revelations of God's work and of those pleasing to Him, to inspire their beholders with piety and to arouse them to follow these examples, and to those who say that they are idols, anathema. Yeah, it
So
goes on.
that, wait a minute. So that goes beyond heresy almost a little bit, because that's like that's saying you're a doubter. If you're a doubter of the Shroud of Turin, you're anathema, right?
No, it's saying that if you're against images,
I thought it said
it's saying,
relics in there.
yeah, well, that too, if you're against relics. I mean, there are people who oppose there are people who oppose the the use of relics. Protestants do.
I see. I guess I've just never thought of that as a heresy, being
What
against relics.
the opposing clerics or clerics opposing relics and images?
Yeah. I mean, that's just
No.
interesting. I mean, I'll ride with that, but that's interesting that you can anathematize over an approach to relics.
Well, yeah, because Trent condemns those who deny relics. And Nicaea too condemned those who denied images. So that means the Calvinists and guys like that would all
What does that mean
be
to deny relics, though? What does that mean?
to deny that you should use relics, the bones and other bits and pieces of saints.
And what's the logic behind that? Behind actually denying relics.
Well, the logic is that they're dead, and you shouldn't be venerating dead people, pieces of dead
Well,
people.
some of I asked that because, again, you have the Shroud of Turin, and more importantly, you have the cross of Christ. So what would they say to those things?
Well, Protestants would be against venerating any relics, you know that.
Well, that's what I'm asking you, because and you said, well, it's desecrating a body, or that's what they would say. Well, I'm saying, so what would they say
No,
to the cross?
what they would say is that it's idolatry.
I don't understand Protestants. I'm sorry.
Don't worry, I'm sure some of our Protestant listeners will inform you.
I'm sorry.
They'll
Yeah.
write in. Now, I have one other thing to touch on, apart from the Sunday of Orthodoxy, and that is I have a favor to ask all of our younger Black Catholic listeners. The Knights of Peter Claver are looking for new members. Stand up, gentlemen. If you live in a place where there's a council, the Knights of Peter Claver, go to it. See if you like it. Check it out. Find out.
So it's just for.
Oh, it's primarily blacks. It's not just blacks. I mean, anybody could join if they wanted, I guess. Any male, any Catholic male. Because the rules are the same as the Knights of Columbus, but it's primarily a black organization. I'm a member. And it's on my mind right now because my council just made me secretary. I know I'm in Austria, but it was pointed out that I can do everything that has to be done. I mean, we had our first council Zoom meeting today.
How active are the Knights of St. Peter Claver? Like, are they structured the same as the Knights of Columbus, where they're attached to a parish, they have monthly meetings?
All that.
I guess I'm just not familiar. Is there a local chapter or what have you
Yeah,
in our area?
well, there was one in Altadena, but I don't think it's there anymore.
Oh, see, that's pretty far. That's why I'm not familiar. But
No,
so,
well, I mean,
the Altadena one is attached to a specific parish, or is that like all of San
no, it
Gabriel
was a,
Valley?
no, it was attached to Sacred Heart.
Okay.
But it's gone now, as I say. Mine is St. Bernadette down in oh golly, it's down by Baldwin Hills.
Okay.
So most of the councils in the LA area are in South Central, so you wouldn't.
Sure.
But
Okay. What?
we've got several. I know we have several young Black Catholic viewers who are regular watchers. And I would ask you can even get in touch with me, care of the program, and I will see about setting you up with something local.
Okay. Contact him through Charles's Facebook page. I think that's your public Facebook page, right? Messages?
Yeah, you
Yeah.
could do that.
Yeah. Okay. Or Twitter. Twitter's good too.
Yeah, or Twitter.
Yeah.
But either way, I'll be very happy to put you in touch with your local your local council. It actually came up this evening that the only one of my several memberships that appears on my Blessed Emperor Charles book is that I'm a Knight of Peter Claver, which they were very happy about that. But I'm very proud of it.
All right. No memes of production today. Sorry about
So we
that.
can't nationalize them.
No.
Don't nationalize the non-existent.
Yeah.
All right.
All
I'm
right.
very tough on that.
Straight to the questions.
Questions?
We've dilly-dallied enough.
Okay. Do you hear yourself? I always think of what Lord Henry Wotton used to say, that punctuality is a waste of time.
I was just talking to Charles. Charles just did a picture of Dorian Gray reference because I'm reading a picture of Dorian Gray and I'm asking him questions and talking about it. And so now he's just
You don't
bringing
know
it on the
that.
show.
Maybe this was a spontaneous observation. I might have just thrown that in there because I felt like it. It could have had nothing to do with our conversation. You don't know.
Mean, punctuality is the thief of time. That's what.
There it is.
So Lord Henry, what I was asking about, because he has so many aphorisms and paradoxes, and I don't know. Do you believe that? Can you explain that? How is punctuality the thief of time?
That's very simple. My time is my own, but people like employers always want me to be somewhere and do something.
Well, it's just a matter of chronology, isn't it? Your time is your own, whether you do it now or later, you're still going to have the same allotment.
All the more reason to do it later.
But see, you're not actually being, it's not actually stealing time, it's just kind of coercing where it
Ah, so
is.
you admit the coercion. Okay.
Thievery is not coercion at all.
Oh, believe me, when a thief takes something from you, you're coerced. You didn't give it up to him freely.
Have you ever seen To Catch a Thief? Hello?
Yes,
Where's the
but I'm
coercion
not.
in that? Cat
Well, he's got to go
burglars?
back to jail if he
Cat
doesn't do as
burglars?
he's told.
So
He's got to go back to jail
you
if
don't
he
believe in
doesn't.
the
If he,
finesse method.
finesse
You
my eye.
just strong arm people.
Yeah, I've been strong-armed. I know what that's like. Huh. And you of all people talking about the evils of strong-arming. I like that. I will say you put a better face on it than some of your family do, so that's all right.
Oh.
You've got more finesse than a lot of
We're
them.
gonna have to talk about your approach to thievery in your yearly review.
This is what I'm talking about. And by the way, that interdepartmental memo you sent out last week,
Yeah.
what's this? Hold on. This is great. In re sharing the pain, it has come to my attention. Ladies and gentlemen, it has come to my attention that there have been complaints voiced by several of staff, I like that, regarding the recently emplaced financial sharing of fiscal difficulties methods in place recently. Know that we are all going through this together.
That's a very professional memo. I don't understand. What, you want me to name people? You want me to call people out? You want me to
No,
fracture our
I think you're
community?
missing my point entirely. Basically, you're saying that where everybody is getting all the lesser employees are getting docked because general profits are going down.
Is that
But
what
how
that said?
is
I
it
don't think that's what that said.
that, that's what it says, trust me. And yet I notice that all of these sharing of difficulties and all the rest of the blah blah that HR has been talking about, I notice that these only commence below the 15th floor.
You don't know you don't know
Everything above the
anything about
15th floor is fine.
you don't know what they get paid. They could have well have
Oh, I, yeah. Yeah, I think I know what they get
I
paid,
couldn't
all
say that
right.
with a straight face. I'm sorry.
I think I know what they get paid. Who do you think you're talking to?
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't say that with a straight face.
No, I don't think so. I've been with the family firm before it went legit. Don't you tell me this.
Okay.
Let's get a grip, do we?
Okay.
Gosh, I never realized that I'd be answering to you when you were little. You know this. Now, let me explain what to make it easy for you. It has indeed come to the attention of many of us working under the 15th floor. It has come to our attention that salaries have not gone down above the 15th floor.
Yeah.
They haven't remained static either. In fact, you can imagine my shock and horror when sitting in the meditation garden, attempting to compose myself at some point, several drunken executives came in from the rip-roaring party they got celebrating their Christmas bonus.
I mean, that's standard, Charles. Incentivized
Nobody
bonuses. Hello.
under the 15th floor got a bonus this year.
Well, they're not responsible for the good performance. That's why. What is a janitor responsible for why we sold so many books this year? Is that what you want to do?
Yeah.
Incentivize the gardeners, the janitors?
Yes.
That's
They'd all be
co
much happier.
that is ridiculous.
They'd all be much happier.
I thought you're against the con. You know, it's funny when we do serious questions, you're all against the concept of equality. But when we're talking about the departments and inner workings of Tumblr House, you're practically communist.
Do you hear yourself? All I'm asking for you to do is to apply the social teachings of the church to your own workforce. I don't think that's too
You
much
want
to ask.
everybody the same level.
No,
Okay,
but I
comrade.
believe in
Okay,
sharing the
comrade.
wealth in the immortal words of Huey Long.
Share the yeah, well, that proves my point.
Every man a king. This is World Social Justice Day. Let me tell you something. In your Uncle Giovanni's day, everybody in the organization got a bonus. Everybody at Christmas. He called it throwing the boys a bone. Yeah. That man knew how to deal with his employees, let me tell you. Everybody shares the loot, he said. Anybody doesn't like it, they can leave. Of course. You know, when he said leave, it had such a final note to it.
All right, let's move on.
All right. Moving along. Now that you've demonstrated your lack of love, we'll move along. There's nothing
Lack
wrong
of
with
love.
it.
If I'm not, isn't that funny? Like the terms that everyone sets. Oh, if you're not communist, it's lack of love. Oh, if you're not Marxist, you're against civil rights in America.
See? My point exactly. If you're not for civil rights in America, you're a Marxist.
No, did I? Is that what I said? No,
Sure.
you have to be Marxist to be in favor of civil rights.
That's
That's how
not
it
true.
goes.
If you oppose civil rights, you're a Marxist. Are you okay? You seem a little confused, boss.
Well, mission accomplished by you then, I guess.
I'm here to bring clarity and comfort and truth.
No, you're here to protect truth from me.
To protect truth from you?
Yeah, because
Okay, well.
confusion is the guardian of truth. So you're protecting truth right now.
True. All right, you got me.
Yeah.
Truth, consider yourself protected.
There you go. There you go. I have no idea what the truth is because you protected
The cloud of unknowing.
it.
All right, fine. Let's get on with the questions. I don't care.
Right. First question is from Amani. Hello, I was wondering what Charles's excuse me. Hello, I was wondering what Charles plans to read and do for Lent, and what activities are open for Carnival in Österreich, or excuse me, how does it pronounce it? Österreich.
Österreich. Well, firstly, Armani, I want to tell you I love your suits. Thank you.
Amani, not Armani. Wait,
Oh.
yeah.
So, all right, destroy another illusion of mine. Fine, I don't care. Anyway, I thought the Armani man was, directly approaching me. All right, never mind. I don't care. Doesn't matter. But well, several things. Firstly, Carnival was really scaled back this year. Normally, it's a big, big thing in Vienna, Fasching, as we call it. Carnival is more of a in Western Germany, the Rhineland, places like that, and it's a big deal there. Here, there are balls in particular, and parties, and dancing, and so on. We weren't able to do much for it this year. We had a very tiny, tiny dance, as in, because we had to observe the COVID regulations. We only had 10 people in the room at once at any given moment, and only one couple dancing. And they took it in turns. But it was, I mean, it was the most we could do, which was unfortunate. As far as Lent goes, well, there are a lot of things. I'm reading St. Francis de Sales, Introduction to a Devout Life. And because of
Available
the
at Tumblr
present.
House.
Really, how much?
Oh, it's 10 books version, which I think is like 15.
15. Well, if you were to get 10 books plus the picture of Dorian Gray plus Joseph Pierce's Oscar Wilde Unmasked.
Then you'd get free shipping and handling.
Really? While supplies last?
That's right. But wait, there's more. Order now and we'll give you a free slicer dicer. I use it myself.
Operators are standing by. Void
Batteries
where
not
prohibited.
included.
Void where prohibited. Sorry, no CODs. We had to get that in, ladies and gentlemen, for the late night crowd who are watching this. We know you wouldn't feel at home unless you heard those come-ons. Anyway, due to the nature of my being here and the Byzantine Rite being, shall we say, of parity of esteem in this place, I've been going during the week to the liturgy of the pre-sanctified, which is just what it sounds like. There's a the pre-sanctified sacrament is given out after you've got a reading of psalms, of penitential psalms, a prayer of Saint Ephrem, a very interesting ceremony with candles and chanting around the altar, prostrations. I mean, I really, when the prostrations start, I just get down on my knees and I go down and keep going. I don't get all the way up the way the young people do. I can't do it. But it's a very penitential service, I can tell you. Tomorrow, incidentally, the Sunday of Orthodoxy, in addition to the anathemas, there'll be a special blessing of icons. Because remember, the Sunday of Orthodoxy commemorates the victory of the icon worship over the icon opponents, the iconoclasts. So that's what I'll be pretty much what I'll be doing. I've given up booze, tobacco. I can't give up meat simply because I can't control my menu. I get whatever the mess is serving,
Yeah.
but I have a great love of peanuts and Pringles, which I won't touch. Except on Sunday, through Lent. So it so happens that as soon as we finish the broadcast this evening, I'm going to dive into the ones I bought earlier today. But normally I'll, and of course, no between meal snacks.
So you're fasting.
Yeah. So that's pretty much what I'll be doing for Lent.
Yeah, I'll be fasting too. You know what the trick to fasting is?
Not eating?
No, it's just making that one big meal really big.
Yeah, make it count.
No,
That's
because
true.
no, it's kind of a joke, a bad joke, because the rules are the two smaller meals can't combine, can't be larger than the big meal. So then
Right.
the big meal you make really big. And it's like, well, okay, the two smaller
Okay,
meals.
so these two boxes of fries together wouldn't be the size of that big
Exactly.
meal. I get it.
Exactly. Yeah. No, but I
I
could.
get it. This
Yeah.
is a good touch of the Jesuit there. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, typical plans for me. No surf and turf, just the surf, you know. Caviar, shrimp, lobster. Yeah.
Champagne because it's not wine.
That's right. That's right. Giving up the wine, but champagne. I mean, you just need something to wash it down, you know what I mean?
That's yeah, knock no chat. That's
So,
beautiful.
yeah. Very penitential. Okay.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Okay.
All right, question from Robert.
Hello, Robert.
Napoleon the new Charlemagne? If Napoleon succeeded in establishing his empire and family, and somehow it all worked out, Britain coming to terms with it, and Russia also, Austria with cordial relationship with France due to the Empress, does Charles think it would be possible for Europe to escape the world wars and for it to unite in some extent to have a peaceful 100 to 200 years? Or is the world at that time fatally committed to nationalism, and even if revolution was crushed in its inception, that the world was heading to radical breakdown in the next 100 years, revolution or no?
Well, see, the problem is that Bonaparte himself was drawn in two very different directions. On the one hand, as shown by his assuming the title of emperor and his calling himself the successor of Charlemagne and his marrying Marie Louise, he wanted to be a legitimate emperor. But by the same token, he also considered himself the incarnation of the ideals of the French Revolution. And was in a lot of ways, the father of the nationalisms of Europe. Certainly, his reorganization, Italy, Spain, Germany, and France, and Low Countries, and so on, did a lot toward establishing nationalisms in those countries. And in fact, as much or even more than Napoleon III, you could count Italy's Cavour and Germany's Bismarck as Napoleon's successors, because they certainly ran Bonapartist countries. So it's hard to say. I mean, again, like Bismarck, like Cavour, and as a result, like Victor Emmanuel III, like Wilhelm II, you had gentlemen who meant well and were trying to square the circle, trying to be traditional monarchs of sort of synthetically created thrones. And the interesting thing is that both Prussia and Sardinia had their own royal traditions, their own legitimate traditions that were basically thrown out the window in pursuit of these new thrones. So it's hard to say.
One caveat to this that I'm reminded of. So, for those of you who are familiar with The Secret of La Salette, or Lady of La Salette, she actually, Our Lady actually talks about Napoleon directly. And she says, "Let him beware of Napoleon. His heart is double. And when he will want to be both Pope and Emperor at the same time, God will soon withdraw from him. He is that eagle who, desiring always to rise, will fall on the sword he wanted to use to force the peoples to exalt him." That's just
That's a fair comment. And that double-hearted bit is precisely what I mean.
So, all right. Question from Joseph.
Hello, Joseph.
He says, question for Charles. What is your opinion on the philosophy and theology of Soren Kierkegaard? I previously submitted a question on anxiety, which you had given a great answer to. Thanks. And have since been getting a bit into Kierkegaard's work on the subject. His take being that anxiety is a logical consequence of freedom. I'd love to hear your opinion on the subject, as I've found Kierkegaard's work thought-provoking. My prayers are always with you and your illustrious host.
That's Aww. You, boss.
Thank you.
Thank you indeed. Well, Kierkegaard, you know, he's a very complex character. I was recently reading about him, and apparently he was drawn in a Catholic direction.
Is he Catholic?
Fell out. No. He was a minister of the Church of Denmark.
The Church of
Denmark?
Kierkegaard.
Yeah. The State Church of Denmark, which was Lutheran.
Oh, okay.
You know how the Church of England... I'll make it simple for you. With me on this. You ready? Okay. Church of England. Say it. Church of England.
Anglican.
Church in Wales.
Anglican.
Church of Ireland.
Church of Ireland.
Anglican. Church of Scotland.
Church of Scotland.
Presbyterian. Church of Denmark. Lutheran. Church of Norway. Lutheran. Church of Sweden. Lutheran. Church of Finland. Lutheran. Church of Iceland. Lutheran. Church of Prussia. United. It's a shotgun wedding between the Lutherans and the Reformed.
Okay.
I won't bother you with Swiss Reformed and Dutch Reformed because their names kind of give away the title. What they are.
Okay.
But they're... What is the religious tradition of the Swiss Reformed Church? I don't know, Lutheran? No. What about the Dutch Lutheran Church? What's their... Yes, okay. Hmm. Dutch Reformed, yes. But the Church of Denmark was the state... Now, each of these were state churches like the Church of England. And still are. What does that mean by being a state church? Well, it means that the head of state has to be a member. The king, or in the cases of Finland and Iceland, the presidents. But the Church of England, Church of Scotland, and the Scandinavian churches, and formerly the Church of Prussia, and the other smaller Church of Württemberg, Church of Baden, and so on. These were all state churches. The head of state had to be a member, and he was the head of the church. There were three interesting exceptions. The King of Saxony, the King of Bavaria, and the Emperor of Austria were all Catholics and all heads of the Protestant Church in their domains. But the Church of Denmark then was and is the state church. And as the state church, also all of the old Catholic buildings, the old Catholic churches, have been taken over by them. So all the medieval churches in those countries, with very few exceptions, belong to the state church.
Got it.
All right. So, as with the Church of England, and we don't think about this stuff very much because they don't speak English. You know, they speak German or funny Scandinavian languages, Dutch. But each of these state churches function more or less as a department of the government. They were very closely connected to the government. So the government supported them financially. As I say, the head of state was the head of the church. They were very close that way. And the opposite was true, too. Obedience to the sovereign was taught as an absolute dogma. And what tended to happen over a great deal of time, and if you want to read about this in a funny way, in the Church of England, I recommend a book called Barchester Towers by Anthony Trollope. Read The Warden first. It's the prequel, both by Anthony Trollope, about the ecclesiastical politics in a small English cathedral town. It gives you a real feeling for how much benefices, that is, paying positions, were, and the sort of dry. You'll understand both the rise of evangelicalism and of Anglo-Catholicism when you read those books, because the religion of the time, the early 19th century, was just very dry, very intellectual, and very, very much about position and place in society. Well, the Church of Denmark was very much like that. Oh, another place where you can see that is a movie called Fanny and Alexander by Ingmar Bergman, in which the villain is a Swedish Lutheran bishop. But it gives you a feeling for the State Church of Sweden in, say, 1905. Well, that's Ingmar Bergman. Gee, my mind is going. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
What, did you mean
Bergman.
Ingrid Bergman?
No, I did not. I meant Ingmar. I did not meet Ingrid Bergman, which I was afraid I'd said.
Yeah.
I tell you what, a mind is a terrible thing to have. Anyway, suffice it to say that Kierkegaard was a very devout member, a priest, as they call them, although they don't have the apostolic succession, and in Denmark don't claim it. The Lutheran Church of Sweden claims the apostolic succession. The church in Denmark does not. Most Lutherans declare that you don't need the apostolic succession. But they don't believe in transubstantiation, so it doesn't matter anyway.
Wait, they don't. I don't think I followed correctly. They claim the apostolic succession, but they claim you don't need the apostolic succession?
That's true of the Church of Sweden. The Church of Denmark does not claim the apostolic succession. The
No,
Church of Sweden does.
I mean, I guess my question is why bother claiming it if you don't even need it? You know?
Do you
Like,
remember
so
how you
what?
said you don't understand?
Yeah.
Okay. You're not the only one.
Okay. So they claim it even though it doesn't matter to them. Okay, got
Well,
it.
it matters to some of them. They
Okay.
have a high church movement, the way the Anglicans do. Anyway, I don't want to get bogged down in that. The point is that Kierkegaard, the Danish Lutherans make no such claim, but they do have bishops, officials they call bishops, that don't claim the apostolic succession. And Kierkegaard was a member of the, he was a cleric of the State Church of Denmark, and early on became very critical of it as not representing real Christianity. And in his, shall we say, spiritual search, he made a lot of very interesting points, including the question of freedom versus, his question of the state church is not really Christian, then what good is it? And he wrote a piece called Attack Upon Christendom, which was not an attack on Christendom as such, but an attack on the whole, on the state churches as they were in Scandinavia and Northern Europe.
But they were Christian churches. I don't understand. He said
Well,
it.
he didn't believe that they were authentically Christian. He believed that they were
Oh.
simply, that they had basically prostituted themselves and were simply agents of state control.
Oh, I see. They weren't true churches. They weren't true Lutheran churches.
Yeah, and they weren't true to themselves. They weren't truly Christian.
Okay.
So he got very upset with them and got into a lot of real conflicts. As I just recently was reading something that asserted that had he lived a bit longer, he would have gone Catholic. I don't remember the argument, but this is what was said. Because he knew a lot of Catholics and he was apparently leaning out in that direction somewhat when he died. How true that is, I don't know, and doubtless the many Kierkegaard scholars who watch this show will chime in to correct me on anything I get wrong. But, he had, as I say, he had interesting things to say. And of course, to understand how Kierkegaard felt about the Church of Denmark at the time, well, I mean, all you have to do is think about how we feel about the bishops and so forth who endorse Biden. No, I mean,
Isn't there officially just one in the entire United States now?
well, I mean, the Cardinal Sepich, of course,
Yeah, that's who I'm referring
and
to.
well, and also Cardinal Gregory in Washington.
Okay, so well, there's two. Is that it?
I'm sure there are others, probably Cardinal Tobin.
But I mean, like the USCCB, like I thought everybody like signed on that on to that statement
Well,
that.
they did, and you know, most of them anyway. I don't know if there were any other dissenters other than Sipich and Gregory. And you know, it's interesting to me that Sipich, as you know, attacked it, and nobody rallied to him.
No, I know. It was a huge blunder by
It
him.
was a huge blunder, and now Sipich is being pulled to Rome, probably to head the Congregation of Bishops and send us morons and scumbags. I hope not. And Cardinal Sarah retired today.
I saw that.
So I'm sure we'll get some real winner to replace him. And see, the problem is that when you appoint moronic folk, what happens is that they tend to get ignored. And one thing I think we're going to see a lot of is Rome being ignored, which isn't the way it should work at all. But what are you supposed to do? Moving along, what
Moving
else you got
along.
for me?
Nothing to see here. All right.
Move along, nothing to see here. You've all got homes to go to. Move along, nothing to see here. Thank you, Officer Clancy. He was always very helpful when your Uncle Giovanni was alive. Nothing to see here. What are you talking about? They shot up the joint. Move along. You've all got homes to go to. I'm telling you, officer, it was a hit. There's no such thing. There's just a few of the boys getting a little excited. But look in there, officer. There must be seven dead bodies. Now, move along. The law have it well in hand. Move along now. There's nothing to see here. And sure enough, by the time the other cops got there, there'd be nothing. And they'd ask Clancy, you know, we heard there were reports of bodies. I don't see any bodies to you. Looks clear as a whistle to me. Looks like some of the boys are having some fun and broke up the glass a bit. That's not.
Trump, you have
You
to
know how
stop.
people exaggerate. I'd go home. Go back to your own beats. I've got this neighborhood nailed down. Don't you worry about it. It's all good here.
Oh man. Wow. Good old
Remember
Officer Clancy. Wow.
myself standing there when I was like 15 or 16, and one of the cops said to me, "Kid, did you see anything?" And I said, "I saw whatever Officer Clancy saw." And Clancy said, "You see, the young man says it himself. Here's a neutral observer, an innocent bystander, as you may say, and he didn't see nothing, did you, kid?" And I said, "No, no, officer, I didn't see a thing."
Okay.
Ah, what a bright lad you are. Here's $20. Go play crap somewhere, will you? Why, thank you, officer. No, I found hanging around Officer Clancy is always very helpful. That's how I got to know your uncle. You know, Ladio, you're so observant. There's someone I want you to meet. Hey, kid, where you from? Well, I'm originally from New York. Yeah, me too. We got a lot in common, I'll bet.
Charles, you have to stop. This is the worst you've ever gotten me.
Just a trip down memory lane. Oh, the dear days of my childhood.
Yeah. Okay.
Just a little neighborhood occurrence, you know, in the good old days. East side, west side, all
What really
around.
got me is Officer Clancy cleaning up seven bodies and just brushing everyone off. Seven bodies here, yeah, but nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here. Move along.
Just an absolute massacre, and he's just.
I wouldn't worry about it if I were you, ladies and gentlemen. It's just the lads having a good time, you know, of a Saturday night. Move along now.
I think what makes that so funny is the fact that he seems so oblivious to the horror around him. He's just like this merry-going person. We got
He
seven bodies
was.
here. Just, yeah, it's as
Well,
if it never happened. Like to him personally, too.
you've got to understand, it wasn't like that at all. You see, in those days, policing was a neighborhood matter. You know, you had to know your neighborhood. And in those days, you found out who the people were and the people who weren't. And you know, you basically got those who were to help you enforcing the law. You see what I'm saying? And so, if you came to a place, let's say you came to a place and it turned out that it was a terrible, dastardly deed done by them Manicottis from across the river. Well, this was a murder. This was an outrage. But on the other hand, you know, the Francanis are local people. And you know, you gotta trust your local folk. You know how it is.
Yes.
And that's how it was, you know. And as I say, when that was how I got to know your uncle. It was Officer Clancy who introduced us.
That's pretty
And
epic.
that's how I knew that he was okay. I told my dad, because he had some doubts when he met your uncle, and he said, I don't know about this guy. He reminds me a lot of Mr. Lisi. And I said, oh no, Dad. I was introduced to him by a policeman.
Okay.
And my father said, oh well, son, if it was a police officer that introduced you, I guess it's okay.
There you go. All right. Take a deep breath. Next question. From Sandra. I have read Charles's response to questions regarding the source of the problems that ail Latin America as independence. However, others have said the Netherlands also got independence from Spain, but does not seem to be suffering in the same way. Would you please respond to this counterclaim?
Sure. Spain, the Netherlands have suffered in a very different way.
How have they suffered?
Well, first, their rebellion was to all caught up with turning Calvinist, and they became a colonial power. They became for a time, the leading members of the slave trade. You remember that it was the slaves were brought to New York. They went into the Indies, into what's now Indonesia, India, Sri Lanka, and wherever they could, they smacked the Catholic faith around. There are large parts of Indonesia that are Protestant today that were forcibly Protestantized by the Dutch. They had been Catholicized under the Portuguese. They didn't succeed in doing that entirely in Malaysia or India or Sri Lanka. But in places like Ambon and Manado in Indonesia, they really did. But now they are very, very secular. And the Netherlands is really, it's in many ways, and I love the Netherlands, I have to say. It's a country, you can't be a New Yorker and not be fond of the Netherlands. But I love the Dutch, but they're one screwy country, totally secular. The moral life is shot to pieces. No, I wouldn't say they did well after independence. Anyway, it's apples and oranges because the Dutch were a pre-existing polity with their own setup. The Americas and the Philippines were very, very different before the Spanish came to them. And I think, unless you like hearts being torn out in Mexico, or the beehive existence of the subjects of the Inca, or the ravening growth of Islam in the Philippines at the time that the Spanish arrived there and pushed it back. Unless you like those things, you'd have to say that what the Spanish did was overall an improvement.
Okay. We have three questions from Anita.
Hello, Anita.
Her first question. There are statues of St. Joseph carrying the Christ child where St. Joseph is stepping on a book. I actually own one such statue. What is the significance of St. Joseph stepping on a book? What is the book? My research has turned up nothing definite on this, but I figure if anybody would know, it's you.
Well, I must say, perhaps no one knows because I have no idea. I mean, I could hazard a guess, but it wouldn't be no more than a guess, so we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, it was really fascinating seeing that be it's a mystery. Like, what book could he be stepping on, you know?
Well, I mean, one source, because I have to admit, this one he told me about, I really did cheat. I looked and I couldn't find anything. I found one priest hazarded a guess that it might be the Old Testament and that it represents his coming out of the Old Testament. The inheritor of David and so forth. I can't think of anything beyond that. So if anybody knows what it means, please let us know.
Right. Many years ago, Richard Nixon came out with a book in which he argued that the Cold War was really World War III. On previous episodes of Off the Menu, Charles has referred to some wars of centuries past as world wars. I've always been accustomed to thinking of world wars as a thing that began in the 20th century. What, in Charles's opinion, qualifies as a world war? And how many does he think there have been in history?
Good question. I would call a world war a war that is fought on several continents at once. That is to say, Europe, the Americas, Asia, Africa. We can spare Australia. So, how many? Well, I would say the War of the Grand Alliance, which we called, in our country, we called King William's War. The War of Spanish Succession, which we called Queen Anne's War. The War of Austrian Succession, which we called King George's War. The Seven Years' War, which we called the French and Indian War. The War of the American Revolution. They divide them into some authors divide into the numbers of coalitions that were put together against the French, but for the sake of our sanity, we'll say the French Revolutionary Wars, 1793 to 1802, I think. And the Peace of Amiens, is that 1798? Or whatever it was. The Napoleonic Wars, which followed a short peace, 2 years, I think. Then World War I, World War II. So I would say nine.
Wow. Okay. last question today. For a long time, excuse me. For a long time, I have been meditating on the fact that the virtue of obedience seems to be very misunderstood among us Catholics. I think it has for decades been weaponized to cow us into submission to all sorts of abuses. From the recovation of churches to the imposition of UN peacekeeper-type uniforms on the Knights of Columbus. On the subject of the Knights of Columbus uniforms, Charles has previously touched on obedience in the context of mutual obligations. Would Charles please discuss the contours of legitimate obedience and elaborate on obedience within the context of mutual obligations? I think that context is very helpful to understanding where our duties really lie.
All right, well, that's a very, very good question. Firstly, the first thing you've got to bear in mind is that obedience is not an end in itself. It's a tool. And what is that tool? Well, the tool, any organization has a reason for being, a reason to exist. Any nation, any people, any voluntary organization, they all have some reason toward which they're aimed. In the case of the church, it's the salvation of souls. In the case of the state, it's the salvation of souls from a temporal aspect. Yes, I know, that's odd. But you really can't understand the right place of the state unless you understand the place of the church. The place of the church is, as I say, to bring souls to heaven via the sacraments, the practice of the virtues, and the teaching of the salvific doctrines of Jesus Christ. The place of the state is to assist the church in doing so. Number one, by repressing evil in laws and so forth, robbery and murder and so forth, by fostering the well-being of the people, because the people who are starving or who are fearful can't worry about their souls very much. And in assisting in other ways, financial, whatever, the work of the church in doing her salvific thing. That's the traditional role of the state. Now, obedience is due from the heads, hierarchically speaking, the heads of any organization, top to bottom, in return for their fulfilling their obligation to their subjects, which is accomplishment of the ends for which the organization exists. So in other words, take the lowest organization of society, whether ecclesiastical or political, the family. All right, you owe obedience to your father as head of the house. You owe obedience to your mother as his helpmate. But if they are doing things which work against the existence of the family, in those particular things, you can't obey them. So if your father's a drunk, you've really got to disobey him when he sends you to the store to get him another bottle of cheap wine. Now, depending on the circumstances, you may have to be prepared to take your punishment. There are limits to which resistance to an unjust order can go. But the thing is that the subject has a right to expect good governance from his masters, as the masters have an obligation to exert good governance for their subjects. And here, you've got to be very, very careful in making a distinction. It's not simply something the subjects don't like, being something resistant. It's got to be something that demonstrably destroys the very existence of the thing. So something that works against the salvation of souls, for instance, dealing with the church, is something that has to be resisted.
Well, that seems to get more complicated, because one of the things, one of the most remarkable things to me about the lives of saints, for many saints, is their obedience in the face of receiving orders that seem to tremendously hinder and impede their mission from God. But they still obey, and the way I map that out is they obey because they know everything is contingent on God. And so if it's really God's will that it be done, then it'll be done. And not to worry.
Except not always.
Except not always.
Not always. You'll find them doing this when it's a question of personal issues. But, for instance, when the Patriarch of Constantinople, who appealed to Pope Honorius for a judgment against monolithism, and Honorius refused and tried to silence the Orthodox, he refused to be silenced. And he's a saint, and Honorius was anathematized by a later council. So these things are not as simple as they seem.
Okay.
This is where we get into the area that's called prudential judgment. I've said this before, I'll say it again. The problem with prudential judgment is that there's no easy guidebook to it. And so it's like mutatis mutandis, it's like it, only different. It's a bit like persecution. Outward persecution. There are three ways you can deal with it. You can be martyred, you can resist it, or you can flee. Now, which of these you do depends entirely on your prudential judgment, which presumably you're arriving at after a lot of prayer and attempting not to put your will first, but God's will. But even with that, you will differ from other people. You have had saints go after each other, hammer and tongs, over what they believe to be questions of truth. I'm thinking of St. Bernard of Clairvaux and St. Wilfrid of York, or St. Augustine and St. Jerome. And those latter two got really nasty. Now, the burden of proof is always on he who believes that the truth is being assaulted by those in charge. And you have to cut every bit of slack and every bit of doubt you can. But in looking back in time, I mean, I think of Pope John the 22nd, who declared that the just will not see God until the end of time, and imprisoned those priests who expressed disagreement. Well, the one in particular is an Englishman whose name escapes me. John the 22nd renounced his heretical views on his deathbed, and the imprisoned English priest eventually became a bishop in England after John the 22nd was gone. But I mention this not to denigrate the thing, but it's not as simple as you would like it to be or as I would like it to be. It's like when Arius, sorry, Nestorius was the Bishop of Constantinople, and he declared that Mary is not the mother of God. Well, his congregation rose up and they threw him out of the cathedral. Now, that presupposes a lot of things. It presupposes a developed sensus fidelium, sense of the faithful, amongst the people, that they were in a position to make a judgment like that. And normally speaking, no matter what he said, you would think that was a horrendous thing to have happen. And yet they were in the right on that particular occasion. So that's why I give you the rather puzzling comment that, well, yeah, that's true, except when it's not. Because it's true, except when it's not. And unfortunately, when these things are happening, the participants, that is the people living at the time, are not the best judges. Which is why you always have to be prepared for the fact that your prudential judgment could be wrong. And that's why you have to be ready to cut whatever you choose to do. You have to be ready to cut those who, with the same principles in mind, do something different. You have to be ready to cut them a lot of slack. Because, I mean, what if you're one of that mob in Constantinople and you saw somebody you knew who refused to join the rest of you in throwing Nestorius out of the church? I can't do that to our bishop. He's our bishop. He's recognized by the Pope in Rome. I'm not going to do anything. Well, this is where, you think you're right. You may very well be right. He may very well be wrong, but you've got to bear in mind that he is doing it. He's doing what he's doing from the same principles that you hold. It's just that they lead him to a different prudential judgment. You see what I'm saying? This stuff. And of course, the thing is that those in authority should never put us in this situation. They have an obligation under God not to put their subjects in areas where they've got to think for themselves. We like to say that thinking for yourself is a great thing and blah, blah, blah. Well, it's fine if you know what you're thinking about, if you know something. But let's face it, most of us don't know a lot about most things. And one of the great lies of our time is that everyone's opinion is equal. Well, no, it's not equal. I mean, I know next to nothing about economics. And pretending that my views on economics have the same worth as somebody who studied it all his life is crazy. It's absolutely insane. I've never owned any property in my whole life. So I'm the last person you want voting on property taxes. I don't even have a stake in it. What am I doing voting for that? Now, sales taxes, it's a different story because I pay like everyone else does. But why should I have a right to vote on property taxes or bond issues? That's not just, it's theft. Well, I say this because, people toss these things off so easily. You just got to obey, or you just got to resist. Well, no. You got to do a lot of thinking and a lot of praying before you do anything. And then do the best you can, but bear in mind you could have been wrong.
Okay. Very good, Charles. Okay.
Don't think I'm going to leave you on a downer like that? That's crazy.
No, we're not going to leave on that.
That's crazy talk.
Was giving us an option at the end, see where if we had more time to do some more content, and I
Yes.
feel like we have more time. So I'm going to make
Yes.
the prudential judgment to
Oh.
continue the show. And now some people might disagree, but this is one of
Well,
those
they
things,
might.
am I right? All right.
They might disagree.
Yeah. No, go on. Were you going to say
Well,
something?
no, I'm just thinking. One of the great things, although thanks to COVID, I can't travel as I did. And by the way, those in our show who are living in remote areas and aren't able to travel in normal times, my whining about not being able to travel through Europe as a result of COVID, it's going to fall on really unsympathetic ears.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought I'd mention that. Similarly, I liked a meme I saw.
Did you?
I did. I loved it. It said, "This year, thanks to COVID, we're not going to Palm Beach." And then under it says, "Normally, it's because we can't afford
I love
it."
that one. I saw that, yeah.
It is one. I do miss Palm Beach, though. I like Palm Beach. I like it a lot better than Palm Springs.
All right, we are going to do a book of the week.
A book of the week.
Book of the week is Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde. I have a
Wow.
very old copy of this, 50-cent copy. Oh, actually, 60-cent. Signet Classic, 60
That's oh, it's
cents.
gone up just in the past few minutes.
Yeah.
The that's not what you that's not the edition you're selling
No,
though.
the edition I'm selling, I'm actually going to put it on the store. Right now, after the show, it's going to be $5. It's one of those Dover publications. It's a very big publishing outfit that they publish all the classics. So you can get that for $5. And at Charles's request, I'm going to add Joseph Pierce's what is it? Unmasking of Oscar Wilde.
That's the
And
one.
so Joseph Pierce is a really good guy. I highly recommend it. Distributist, among other things. I need to interview Joseph Pierce, to be honest. But
Yeah.
I'm halfway through Picture of Dorian Gray. Now, Oscar Wilde, let me preface this. This is one of those guys where I think we've all seen quotes from him on the internet, and they're just so clever. And so I knew I would love his writing. And I do. And it's some of the most clever writing I've ever read. It's very dark, though, Picture of Dorian Gray. It's a lot darker than I imagined. It really immerses you in some of this ugliness. But so we were talking before the show about Lord Henry. I asked you about Lord Henry. This is one of the interesting characters that I wonder about because he has all these aphorisms, all these paradoxes that he doesn't really live by, but he spouts them all the time to be clever at parties. And yeah.
He does, yeah. And I don't want to give any spoilers because you haven't finished it. But
Yeah.
suffice to say that one of the observations someone makes is that he says dreadful things, but he never does them.
Yeah.
And in a sense, there have been figures like that. Their philosophies were worse than their personal behavior.
Well, I think that's part of the sort of a theme that's hitting me is people's who have worldviews that don't actually play out in real life. And the worldview that hits me immediately is sort of the deterministic worldview, right? Atheistic, deterministic. Everything's lined up. You can't escape. Oh, Calvinism, right?
No.
See, that's another one where it doesn't actually play in your real life decision making. So it's kind of a bad thing.
No. People who hold such views don't really act on them because you couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were going to, you just have to sit there and take what comes. You know, and nobody does that. But no, it Wilde was an interesting character. He was Irish, Protestant Irish, Anglo-Irish. His parents were actually well-known writers as well. His mother in particular was extremely famous as a writer about Irish folklore and legends and so on. And he wanted to convert to Catholicism actually as early as when he was at university. But his father forbade it. And I'm sure our audience know the unpleasant end his career came to with his trial and so on. But he was of the opinion that had he been allowed to convert when he wanted to, things would have been quite different. As it was, he converted on his deathbed, making two very funny aphorisms on the way out.
Is he the one that always said he thought death would make an exception in his case?
I don't know if he said that. I don't think so. But anyway, what he did say of a certainty, in his deathbed room, he loathed the wallpaper.
Okay.
He thought it was hideous. And he said, either the wallpaper goes or I do.
That's good.
And the other line of his, because he knew he was dying.
Yeah.
You know, and the other line of his was that at that time, someone sent him a case of very expensive champagne. And he said, here I am dying beyond my means.
He is so, ladies and gentlemen, he is so witty and clever. You know, I notice with classics, you know, in literature in general, they wow you. There are certain passages where you're just like, you're spellbound. I mean, you're awestruck, you know, where, you know, Tolkien has these passages. It's like, wow, that's just the depth of human feeling there. Hemingway has this passage like, wow, that's humanity right there. Oscar Wilde has passages like, wow, that's like the most clever, genius dialogue I've ever seen. And so that's some of these. But I want to give you an example. So we're talking about Lord Henry and these paradoxes. And I want to give you an example, some example of these paradoxes. I remember Lord Henry said, if you like everyone, that means you're indifferent to everyone. See that? And see, it's all these things that kind of make you wonder, like, is that true? That there's a truth to that, as you've said.
No, there's a certain truth. I mean, if you like everyone equally, quote unquote, it means
you're not making a judgment. Yeah, you're not.
No,
you're just indifferent. Another one. The more you engage in philanthropy, the less you care about people.
And that sounds paradoxical, but there's a certain truth to it, because if you give $5 to a bum on the street, that's a particular connection you've made. It's a human connection. If you contribute to a cause that you're actually there for, like a soup kitchen or maybe your old high school, whatever it might be, that you actually go there from time to time, you're involved with it, that's one thing. But if you end up, you know, you donate a large sum of money every month to the March of Dimes, well, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
It just fails to have any meaning.
Immediately think of like Bill Gates, right? Like, is this the great lover of human beings? You know,
except in the individual. Of course, that thinking of that makes me think of the old story of the child psychologist.
Okay.
Well, it was interesting because he was like Dr. Spock. He turned out a lot of books about child care and so on. And everyone thought of him as a great lover of children. Well, it so happened he was having breakfast one morning with a lady friend, who had come over, and they were chattering away and everything was fine. But he had just had, in the front of the house, he had just had the new cement laid down, and it was still wet, you know, on the walkway up to the door. So the neighborhood kids were all writing their names in it and putting their handprints and doing what kids will do with wet cement. Well, he sees this, throws down his napkin, goes running out of the house, yelling at them, a foul obscenities, just jumping up and down. And the kids, you know, they're frightened out of their wits, and they're gone. They scatter. So he comes back after they've all fled the wet cement. Comes back, and he says to the lady, he says, "Well, that'll serve the little bastards." She says, "I thought you loved children." He says, "I do. I love them in the abstract, not in the concrete."
Wow. Wow.
And it does go to the philanthropy of a Bill Gates, or the, well, you know, you see a good example like this. You take the Ford or the Rockefeller foundations. Okay.
Yeah.
Now you look at the founders of those foundations, Henry Ford and John D. Rockefeller. They did a lot of hands-on personal things. Like the Colonial Williamsburg, Greenfield Village, that Ford did in Michigan, the Longfellow's Wayside Inn, a bunch of other concrete museums, living history things, etc. The projects that they themselves were very intimately involved with. They would go to these places and so on. Well, to keep up that kind of work, they endowed these gigantic foundations, which, I mean, look at their websites today, and you'll see they've got their fingers in a million pies across the planet. But is there anybody who really has the same feeling for any of that stuff that those two men had for Williamsburg or Greenfield Village? I doubt it highly. What started out as, and again, you know, I'm not what you would call a big fan of either Rockefeller or Ford,
Yeah.
but you can't take away from the fact that they did a number of things for the United States in terms of culture and so on that were worthwhile. They did some other things that weren't, but they did some things that really were. And love them or hate them, they left successes that were neither better or worse, but just sort of gray and blah. And those foundations do a lot of, from the Catholic point of view, damage overseas, particularly in things like population and so on, which was not what they were doing when they began. So I think Wilde's comment there about about philanthropy is very true.
Now, let's go over a
Stay away from the 13th floor. You know, that really didn't make any sense, and I thought it was kind of out of context in Dorian Gray.
Yeah, that's a strange one. All right,
I thought so. I mean, and for Lord Henry to say that apropos of nothing at Lady Windermere's party, I don't know what. Wow. Well, that's later in the book.
creating
You haven't
some sort
gotten
of
there
time vortex here.
yet.
All right. Never marry at all. Men marry because they are tired, women because they are curious. Both are disappointed. And obviously, I think another thing is emerging about Lord Henry's character is his overwhelming cynicism toward everything.
No, he was warm-hearted.
Nowadays, people know the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Well, now that's often quoted, and I think it's very true.
It is very true. That's a good one. That's a good one. Here's a weird one. Women represent the triumph of matter over mind, just as men represent the triumph of mind over morals. So, but it goes on. It's just I think I'll leave it at there, but
Well, I understand that last one too. I've always told you what I would call, if I were to write a book about the relationship between the sexes, I've told you what I would call it.
what women are crazy, men are pigs?
Men are pigs, women are crazy,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I mean, that's very true.
Yeah, it is
That's very
true. And
true.
that's exactly what Lord Henry is saying there.
Okay. Yeah, I guess that's true. I guess that's
Yeah.
true in a more eloquent
My
way.
mind or matter over mind. Women are crazy. Mind over morals. Men are pigs.
That's very true. So,
I mean this in a nice way, unlike Lord Henry.
yeah, so this is an example of how incredible Oscar Wilde is, that a single person is coming up with all of these witticisms. It's just a marvel to me.
Well, he was a brilliant man, and he came from an era that produced a lot of brilliant men. We don't, and that's something we should probably think about.
Yeah.
But Joseph Pierce's book is very, very important because it deals with Oscar Wilde's relationship with the Catholic Church over his life and his final conversion. And it's a good read. It's really worthwhile. I would also, if you get the chance, read his as a follow-up to it, read his book, The Catholic Converts, The Catholic Literary Converts, I should say.
Oh, yeah, I know that one. Yeah, okay.
It's and the reason why it's a good follow-up is that at the time and then after Oscar Wilde, a ton of these literary people came into the church in Britain. There are actually a lot in France and Germany that re rediscovered the faith, as it were. But obviously, since we're English speakers, this has more of a impact on us. But yeah, I mean, one of the other things too, ladies and gentlemen, that has kind of been lost sight of, and that Dorian Gray might help you regain, is a love of literature. You said earlier the classics make you go, wow. Well, that's why they're classics. There's a reason why people read them and why they read them. One of the things also, for those of you who don't have a great deal of time, I could recommend to you, and you're going to think I'm being funny, but I'm not. There is a series of comic books on the Internet Archive called Classics Illustrated, which I read when I was a kid. And they're really, really good because they are just what they sound like. They are the renditions of classics into comic books. And as I learned years later, reading so many of the books that I'd read the comics for, they were good introductions. They don't equal by any stretch reading the original, but they certainly will arouse your interest in it, especially if you don't have a great deal of time yet. But that's the funny thing, ladies and gentlemen. If you get into the habit of reading this stuff, you'll make time.
That's what I said. If you do the math, what you just read 10 pages a day. So what, that's 3,000, that's over 3,000 pages. I mean, that's like, I mean, how many books, depending on, it's maybe 10 books,
Yeah.
give or take.
And what I do myself, and did more of when I had a car and was driving around, I would always have three books I was reading at any given time. One book by the TV, one book in the bathroom, and one book in the car.
You've got to make time. You actively have to make time. And I know everybody struggles with this because whenever I set up shop at like a marketplace, like at a church fair or something, I always ask people, do you read? And they always have the exact same expression and say the same thing. They're like, not as much as I should.
Well, here's buy this and read it, and then you'll have begun conquering yourself. No CODs accepted. Sorry.
Battery's not included.
As seen on TV.
All right, let's close up. Let's close it up, Charles.
All right, gosh. I feel like mom's telling me to come on home.
Yeah.
Dinner's ready.
Yeah.
Oh well. Well, just remember this. You know, if you're feeling worried about the state of affairs right now, if you're worried about the state of the economy, the rising crime rate, anything like that, remember that out there somewhere, there's some paladin of the law like dear old Officer Clancy, willing to look the other way if you'll pay him the right amount. What?
Yeah, no, he's my favorite.
He was, all his kids loved Officer Clancy.
Good with kids.
Oh, I'll say. No, here's $5 if you'll tell the sergeant when he comes along that I make my beat rounds every day. Okay, officer.
Gee, thanks, officer.
Say, kid, does that old Irishman come around every day? Oh, you mean Officer Clancy? Oh, gosh, sometimes twice in a day, sergeant. Really? Oh, yeah. All us kids love him.
You know,
Well, you know,
I
that way he didn't have to go too far from Kelsey's, which was sort of like his command post.
rest easy knowing Officer Clancy's out there looking out, watching out for us, taking care of
Well,
us.
my dad, after, you know, after I'd been working for your uncle for a while, your dad got to know Officer Clancy better. He said, "Yeah, if you got the money, that boy's got the time."
So that's where you got that from. Aha.
I said, "Well, I thought it was a compliment."
Okay.
You know, back in the old neighborhood, things were different. Everybody loved everybody. We had Officer Clancy on the beat. And you know, there were actually, if you can believe it, there were skills for kids tutorials done right there on the street. Hot wiring cars, hubcap removal. I mean, basically, you could get a whole education in car maintenance just by standing there on our block.
I'm sure, Charles.
What? It was wonderful.
All right.
And you know something? You know what, they didn't have any steakhouses in our neighborhood, but they sure had chop shops. Ha ha
Ha ha ha
ha
ha
ha
ha.
ha ha
All right. We hope you've all enjoyed this episode, everyone.
Indeed, indeed. And remember, ladies and gentlemen,
If it's Monday,
don't, please don't help me. It's off the menu.
and the soul you save,
May be your own.
see you next time.
God bless, good night, and happy Washington's birthday.